Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome back to Rogue Startups, episode 158. Hope everyone is having a good start to the new year. Dave, how you doing?
I am doing great. We are starting the new year so far completely virus-free after a week of school, which I think is a fucking miracle.
Yeah, for sure. This time of year especially, right?
Oh, my God. Yeah, I mean, they keep talking about like this huge flu epidemic. And of course, my mom, who's in her 80s and volunteering at a hospital, I get to hear more about this than I really want to. But she's like, you know, asking us every single time that, you know, are you guys sick? Is anybody sick? Is anybody bringing viruses home? And I'm like, Jesus, Mom, I have no idea. No, everybody's healthy. Stop saying that.
It's the great thing we get with having like older parents now is that half the conversation revolves around their health and lack thereof. Yeah.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Totally.
I'm never going to get old.
Yeah. Good luck on that
one. One day I'm just going to go skiing or fishing or something. And there's going to be like, oh, Craig, what? Where's Craig?
Yeah. Oh, speaking of skiing, Big Snow Tiny Conf is coming up here in less than 4 weeks for Colorado, less than that for East. And I'm going skiing for the first time this weekend.
Awesome. Awesome. I wish you well. I wish you well. Is there decent snow there so far?
You know, this year has been way better than last year.
Okay, good.
And, you know, a lot of places have like 30 some odd inch base, which is pretty average for this time of year. And it's been getting more consistent, but we're supposed to get like 5 inches of snow tomorrow down here in Denver, which usually means like 5 to 10 in the mountains. So I'm looking forward to some good conditions on Saturday.
That's awesome. Good for you guys. Yeah. I kind of quietly made a push to get a group together for a Europe event this year. It didn't pan out, so I'm just kind of throwing in the towel pretty much entirely on doing a ski trip over here. But have been skiing myself, and the weather is just horrible. We've gotten almost no snow here. We just got snow yesterday for the first time that stuck all year. A lot of places just have like 20 or 30% of the pistes open at this point. So it's really kind of sad, but it will come, I'm sure.
Yes. So how are things going with Castos and Sales Camp?
Man. Yeah. So, you know, Dave, I want to have a teardown, but an honest discussion about Sales Camp at some point. Probably not today because I'm not in the right mental mindset today to do it, but I want to have an honest conversation about it. I would love to kind of have a chance to think through some of the stuff we're going through out loud and have some fun stuff and good stuff that we're going through. A lot of it sucks, but some of it is good. So definitely want to talk more about Sales Camp. Maybe like a dedicated episode to kind of things we've learned in good and bad ways there. Castos is going well. I think I mentioned in the James Kennedy episode, we had one of our best months ever in December, January. I think, so we have a 2 month trial in January. And so I think we're seeing the Christmas time lull right about now. So we're recording this on the 10th or 11th on the 10th. And so it's exactly like 2 weeks to just after Christmas. And so we've had very few new paying customers this month, which is anxiety inducing for sure. But generally things are going well. We're a lot like on a push to make quite a few infrastructure changes in this quarter. And we just made the first two in the past week and a half, which will kind of make the platform run faster and more stable and cost less to run and all this kind of stuff. That's kind of the whole goal with all this stuff. So it's good. And looking forward a little bit, the big thing that I am excited to talk about on the podcast and hopefully share some things I've learned is a lot about traffic measurement and conversion ratio. I don't want to say optimization because we're not like an e-commerce store or anything, but basically tracking new visits to the website, and the pieces that bring people in, and then what happens with those people once they get on the site? Did they sign up for a trial? Do we get their email? How are we doing with like email nurturing, all this kind of stuff? And am using a mixture of Google Analytics and Woopra to do that. And so hoping to learn like some lessons there that I can implement hopefully on Sales Camp down the road once we get the content machine running there. But kind of saying like, how can we write content that brings people in, that sign up for a trial, and those people convert? And being able to measure basically any of that, you know, because like we basically just have like the vanity metric of like how many website visits do we have to our blog posts, which doesn't really mean anything, you know, like they just totally come and read the blog post. Who fucking cares? I mean, not, yeah, well, a little bit. Who fucking cares? Like, I don't write blog posts for charity. Like, we write it to further our brand and serve our existing customers to get new customers. But if you don't know if you're doing that, then it's kind of all for naught. So it's really hard and complicated, and I've read a couple of good blog posts about it, and I probably will be blogging about it and talking about it here on the podcast. But that's kind of my like my first quarter big initiative with Castos, is to figure out why people are coming to our site and doing a lot more of it. And it will revolve a lot around content.
Cool.
Yeah. So yeah, that's kind of what's going on there. How about with you?
Well, got a mixed bunch of things going on here. So one, we're trying to push a release of AWPCP out the door, and this thing has just been dragging on for fucking months. It's killing me at this point. I kind of hoped it would be done in December, and then the guy that was working on it for me like dropped his hours in half and didn't really tell me, and I didn't, you know, I wasn't like monitoring it with any great gusto. And then I get to the first week of January and he's like, oh yeah, I don't think we're going to get it out until the February. And I'm like, wait a minute, why? I'm like, what were we working on in December? And then I went and looked at his hours and I'm like, shit, we were only working on half as much as I thought we were. And then, you know, I got this long list and I'm like, dude, you want to move on from this? I want to move on from this. Get it fucking done. You know, this is, I'm done with this, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So trying to push that out the door. So there's a little bit of project management involved there, but not much. The other thing that we're working on right now with Recapture is like this massive integration push. So there's like six different platforms that we've discovered and we're trying to push to get them all done like really fast. There's a deadline that I can't really reveal why at this point, but there is a deadline and got to get it done. So we try to figure out what the scope of those look like and what is critical and what we can leave out and how far we have to go to make it polished and still work and all of these things. Anyway, so we're in the middle of that right now. And on top of all that, you know, we're not having tons of paying customers signing up either, because this is sort of like a dead zone post holidays at this point. Got a little bit of sign up, but we're also getting like some of that frustrating churn where cards are flipping over after the new year and expiring, and now they're not, you know, going back in and updating their billing. And so I'm sending them, you know, a crap ton of dunning emails, and some of them have updated, not all of them have. And so I'm just sitting over here gripping my desk with white knuckles, like, please come on, just update your damn card. I hate churn like that, you know. And then I had like one of the companies that signed up for Recapture, they're in liquidation now.
So, oh, you're not getting paid like, there. I'm
not getting paid for that one. That's gone. They're dead. They're out of here. I'm like, damn it. I hate announcements like that. And of course, you know, it's not like they tell me these things. I saw this in an email that was an autoresponder that came back and said, you know, as of such and such, this company is now in liquidation. I'm like, oh, that's good.
No
to good.
That's no good.
Yeah.
So I have two questions, or a comment and a question there. One is around dunning emails. I would love to know what you do, and for anyone listening, if you have a magic kind of secret sauce that you do for what happens after dunning emails go through and the customer still doesn't update their card and essentially goes into like unpaid status in Stripe, what do you do? I don't know, Dave, what do you do? And people listening, what do you do? I'd love to hear like in the comments or send us an email.
Yeah. So what I do is right now we're using Stunning.
Yep.
And they send three or five. I may have it configured for five. A five email sequence trying to basically badger him to sign up again. And in that time, they pop up a, you know, it, you know how Stunning works, because they pop up a payment thing and they can update it right there. And a lot of the time that works pretty well. Sometimes if they're having problems with their bank, that doesn't really resolve it. And at the end of it, like if it goes through those five emails and they're still not paying, then at that point I get a little tickler from Stunning that says, hey, we've tried to recover Bob who hasn't been paying you. You need to reach out yourself. And so at that point, what I usually do is I'll hit up their store. I'll dig up any emails I'll have, and I'll try it on a non-recapture email in case for some reason they're getting blocked.
Mm.
So I try it like a separate domain, and then I'll reach out through a contact form on their website. And sometimes I'll also reach out through intercom as well. And if they're like logging in regularly, the intercom will catch them. If they were getting blocked, then the domain one will catch them. And if for some reason they were ignoring the emails, going to the contact form will catch them, because their own emails usually get delivered to them. At that point, if I've done all three of those things and they're still not doing it, that's eight contact points I've had. The likelihood of them signing up at that point or recovering that is low. Sometimes I will go back and do like a last ditch effort a month later to say, hey, you know, are you still interested in coming back for this? I maybe just forgot about it. Wasn't on your priority list, blah, blah, blah. I've recovered a couple people like that over the years. But yeah, it's once you reach eight, the percentage of success goes way down, unfortunately.
Yeah. So what does the app do though? So like someone goes into unpaid status, are they locked out of the app? Do you have like they can only log in and see the billing page, or how does that work? Do you kill all their data?
No. I don't do any of those things, because I feel like that's pretty hostile. If somebody's – because I've had people that have genuine payment problems where they're like – I don't know what's going on with them personally, but they're like switching cards every 2 or 3 months. And I'm like, oh, that ain't okay.
Good. Whatever is going on is not good.
It's probably not good, but okay, whatever, you know. And there's different places in the world. Like I understand Brazilian credit cards are a huge pain in the ass, that they like have these weird rules about the float and how they hold money. And I've got a couple of Brazilian customers, and sometimes their cards come back that say decline or do not honor or whatever, or insufficient funds. And if they just wait a little bit longer, like another 15 days, then all of a sudden they can do their back payment and their current payment. So a lot of it's just, you know, being patient. I try to give a lot of latitude to paying customers. If you blow me off for more than 30 days, though, the odds of your account sticking around are pretty low. But yeah, I mean, the way that it works right now is if you're on a paid account and you run out of emails, you no longer have emails being sent out.
Okay.
So if they stop paying, emails stop sending. Up to a certain point. So a lot of the times you'll be paid and then you'll have a limit of like 10,000 and maybe they're only at like seven. So they've got a long way to go before they actually hit that. But that's kind of the way that it works right now. And if they don't pay, then it kind of degrades to a free account where they, you know, can recover up to $500, but all the paying customers are recovering more than that. So yeah, I have mixed feelings on that. You know, I totally understand that, you know, hold it down and don't give them anything until they pay you back the money. On the other hand, you know, I feel like that's kind of heavy handed and it's not really customer friendly. So we're trying to be customer friendly.
Mm.
And I don't really feel like a lot of people are taking advantage of that or abusing it. It's mostly situational stuff that arises, the card thing that I told you about, the float thing.
Yeah.
Or they're just flat out leaving. So, you know, I don't really see abuse in between.
Yeah, so I ask because we have I think it's kind of the nature of the I don't know, type of customers we have, where a lot of our customers are hobbyists for Castos, where we have I don't know if we have a lot of failed payments, but I think about it a lot because it seems like something we should be able to totally avoid or resolve, but it seems like an area we can resolve. it's not like a problem with the product or they stop podcasting or something. It's just like they haven't paid. We can get them to pay and all this kind of stuff. So we use Retain from ProfitWell, and it sends out the same kind of couple of emails. It locks out the app and just presents a card update form to the customer when they try to log in. But with especially if people are using WordPress, they might not go to the Castos app very often or ever, because you don't really need to other than to get analytics. And then we built a separate series of emails that we send people to say, okay, you're in kind of past due status now. Your account is going to be closed soon, because it's pretty standard with like hosting companies. Like if you go unpaid, then it just they close your account. So we send them a couple of emails over the course of about a week or so, and then a final, like, your files are going to get archived and your show's going to get deleted in another week. And I still think it doesn't work that well. Like, it's crazy. I just wish that, like, I feel like this actually is an opportunity for somebody to do better than things like Retain or Stunning or something like that, which gets people to pay up to the, when they're kind of due. But when they go past due, I feel like there should be something to say like, okay, we're going to send these extra emails and then close the person out in the app. I don't, maybe it's all custom, so that couldn't be like a separate service or something. But yeah, no, past the level of Stunning is where there needs to be customization, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you could kind of do that with Stunning. I mean, you could definitely do it in something like Drip, right? Because you could trigger a custom workflow that says, here's what their date is. And then you just keep updating that date. And when they stop paying, the date no longer gets updated. So then it triggers another workflow when it goes past that date. So all of that could be set up in Drip, although that's kind of complicated.
Yeah.
But no, I hear what you're saying. I think that's good. Have you checked your deliverability? Like, do you see what your open rate looks like on these emails?
It should be good. So we send... So Retain, ProfitWell sends the first, whatever, few emails, and then we send the rest of them through Postmark. So it should be very good.
Yeah, that definitely would have high deliverability. So, I don't know. That's really odd. I mean, you know, it's one of those things that if they are at the hobbyist level, like you said, then you're pretty much at the mercy of whether they really feel passionately about the product or not. And they could just be trying it on like a pair of pants, right?
And they're
not invested in the pants yet.
Yeah. When it's also like, you know, hey, let's start a podcast. And they start a podcast and they sign up for the service and they're like, I don't want a podcast anymore. And that's fine. I just, you know, I'd rather them cancel than us have all these failed payments. It makes me feel like we're leaving money on the table.
Yeah. That part totally sucks. Yeah. And there's, you know, what are you going to do about that, right?
Right. You know, I guess the other update from my end, and then we'll get into something that's kind of been going on in our worlds, is I've been on, I guess, a bit of a, like, unintentional podcast tour lately. So have been on a couple of podcasts in our kind of world, and they'll be going live here in the next kind of weeks or months, I guess. So that's been really cool. I guess the first time I've been interviewed on more than a couple of podcasts in the last couple of weeks. But it's really cool to see how other people run their podcasts and stuff. Dave, I think we do a good job of scheduling and onboarding guests. It's about the same as I've been getting from some of these other podcasts. But it's been cool also to talk about our show and to talk about what we're doing with Castos and stuff. And I'll probably try to be a little more intentional about getting on a podcast every month or so through the end of the year, because I mean, it's a really, I should be singing the praises of podcasts more than I do, but it's like a really low amount of time investment for a really good piece of content and a backlink and name recognition and getting out and sharing someone's else's audience and all the good stuff you hear about, like with guest blog posting, but it just takes 30 minutes. You know, it's great. No, you went on kind of a bit of a podcast tour last year, right?
I did. I went on a variety of e-commerce podcasts here, and I'm going to try to revive that a little bit again and get on for some different stuff. I mean, my problem last year was that I had sort of a limited repertoire of things I could talk about. And, you know, when GDPR came up, I actually got to add one more, which was kind of cool. But when I was going through the various things there, I was like, all right, well, what do you want to talk about? Abandoned carts, where e-commerce is going, customer lifetime value, or GDPR? You know, those were the salient topics of the day. And some of them were like, yeah, great. And some of them were like, meh.
Right.
And some of them just never even got back to me. I was like, okay, well, I'm a no name, so they're not even interested in talking to me. But yeah, I mean, you go in these podcasts and you try to find something that's a good fit and you hope that it works out and you hope that the audience is the same kind of audience that you're looking to connect with. And yeah, I mean, I've got some of that scheduled here for early 2019. I've got a commerce podcast in February scheduled at this point. I'll try to get something in March and April as well, just to kind of keep, you know, a steady flow. I think when you hit it all at once, it might be a little too much.
Yeah.
Because then there's no follow-up on that. If people are like listening to one podcast versus another, then they just hear you all at once and then nothing for a long time, which I don't think is good. So.
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. We're sponsoring a podcast in the WordPress space here coming up shortly in the next couple of months. So I'll be interested to report back on what we see about that and the attribution and results it shows for the business. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes.
I was just going to ask
what email provider I'm moving to.
No. Yeah, I was going to ask, have you heard anything controversial lately about email service providers out there that we might want to discuss today?
Yeah. So, you know, I would like to try to stay positive about this and like things we can learn. Did you read Rob's like tweet storm about this?
I did actually. And I had a conversation with Rob offline as well about the whole thing. And I think, yeah, I mean, this really raised a lot of rancor out there in the bootstrapping community. And I think, so this is my opinion and my take on all of this. But anyway, if for some reason you've somehow been hiding under a rock and you missed it, Drip has been raising their prices. They'll do it in 4 days as of the record date right now. But the thing that I think kind of pissed everybody off at once was the manner in which it was communicated and sort of the history that led up to that particular day of the email being sent out. And my editorial take on all of this is that we've kind of, you know, Drip is like our collective bootstrapped baby. Like we've watched Drip grow up. We listened about it on Startups for the Rest of Us. We heard Rob talk about it at MicroConf. We got to see the growth in charts and, you know, status updates. And then some of us would sign up as customers and other people came on as customers. The testimonials were flying wildly on Twitter. And then they sold Delete Pages. And, you know, the nature of things always changing is a frustrating thing. And Lead Pages is not the Rob and Derek show anymore, which we all loved and kind of got behind. They're running it differently. Rob and Derek have exited at this point. The support is not what it used to be. The deliverability is not what it used to be. You kind of don't feel like you've got that secret back door into the Drip support anymore. If you were talking to Rob directly about that, I know some people did. He eventually discouraged that, of course, because it was like, it's too much. Just go through the fucking support, man.
Right, right.
Yeah. But it kind of feels like this collective disappointment. Like you had a family member that joined a punk rock band, got their nipples pierced, their butt tattooed, and you're like, what the fuck happened, man? Like, what happened to you? I think that sums up at least my reaction to the whole Drip debacle here, because it doesn't feel like the old Drip in any way, shape, or form at this point. I mean, it hasn't felt like that for a while, but then add to all of that the ham-fisted way in which they handled the price increase. And, you know, it was just basically a powder keg waiting to explode. So for me, I'm like, yeah, it's a change and it's different. And I wasn't expecting it to stay the same forever. I also wasn't expecting 100% price increase with no notice either. So, that was a bit of a shock. But you know, it's a different company and these guys have it for different reasons. They bought it as a value producing asset. So what do you think they're going to do? You bet your ass they're going to raise prices at some point.
Right.
And if they lose half their customers, but they double their revenue, now they've just reduced their support burden. So in essence, they've actually improved their profitability, even though their top line MRR might not change or it might improve. I don't know. But they're cutting their costs at the same time because they had those free plans open as well. But so much better.
Yeah. So I think that we can definitely learn the lesson about how to communicate this. And I think, Dave, we've talked about this before with HelpScout updating their pricing, a couple of years ago. And we'll maybe try to link to that email or share that email in the post for this episode. And like, that's the right way to do a price update notification to your existing customers. I think that there's a lot to this. I mean, there's like the sentimental and emotional aspect of a company that you got behind because you knew the person running it and them changing the prices and what that means to you, like on an emotional level. That was like my first reaction to it, is I was like, I'm leaving. All three of my accounts are leaving. I don't want anything to do with this company anymore. Lead Pages is a screw in the pooch here. And then I started thinking about it a little bit from the perspective that you mentioned, that like, hey, this is Lead Pages is a funded, although like, you know, they're bootstrapped and they raised a bunch of money. I don't think they're using a lot of the money, but they're like a high growth company. They need to make the acquisition profitable. I get that. So I looked at it from that perspective a little bit. I also looked at it from the perspective of, if you shop the comparable tiers of Drip to other services out there, it actually is reasonably priced on the new pricing. If you're on the low end of the scale, the pricing doesn't change at all. So that's something to consider, that like, if you're on the $49 a month, which is up to like 2,500 subscribers, the pricing doesn't change at all. So I'll tell you, I'll say what we did and are doing, and it's still in flux a little bit. I think everybody's probably in flux a little bit about what they're doing. So across Podcast Motor, Castos, and Sales Camp, we were all at Drip. Podcast Motor uses email marketing pretty lightly. So we have some automations and campaigns for just marketing stuff and courses and stuff like that. We moved all of that right away to ConvertKit because it was really easy to move. We have people in campaigns. We'll let them run their campaigns out here over the next couple of days and move over before the price increase goes live. And ConvertKit made that really easy. I just basically had to copy over a couple of campaigns and then update the forms on the website. For Castos and for SalesCamp, because they're SaaS apps, we have like API integrations with Drip right now. And I know at the time of this recording, I'm up in the air about Castos because our price will move from $99 to $122. And if I look at the dev time to integrate a whole new API into the app and deploy it and let all the existing customers work through their 2-week trial on Drip, I'll probably, you know, it's like 6 months of cost recovery time that I'm looking at, or more. So we may well just stick with Drip for Castos. And for SalesCamp, since our price isn't changing any, we already have the API integration, we're just going to stay with Drip. Because amazingly, Dave, can you believe this? I've started trials with 4 or 5 different email providers this week. Drip is the only one, can you fucking believe this, that has a direct, like, full-on Stripe integration, to where you can say, when a new customer is created in Stripe, this thing happens in our app. They're the only one.
No shit?
No fucking shit. Yeah. I'm like, that is the most common thing that anyone running a business wants to do, is when I have a new customer, start doing this thing, right? Tags, workflows, automations, whatever you call it. Active Campaign doesn't have it. Autopilot doesn't have it. I don't think that ConvertKit has it, although I'm sure Sean will yell at me for this.
I'm sure you could get it through Zapier, but you know, no, that's a layer of indirection.
Yeah,
you
gotta duct tape, Zapier, right? Account now. I mean, Drip, yeah. It's like, put your, you know, one OAuth into Stripe, right? And that's a one-time thing. And then when Stripe does these handful of things they have set up, then we will do whatever. That's a trigger. That is so easy. And all these other email providers that I checked out, that MailerLite, I looked at MailerLite, doesn't have it. I was like, how can you not have this? Like, how can you have it for Recurly and not for Stripe? You know, like, that's just so crazy. Some of these providers, I don't know. So
that's off. That seems very off. Yeah.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah. So anyways, I mean, that's what we're doing, and maybe a little bit of logic behind it. Now, I don't really fault John Tedesco and those guys for raising the price. I think they definitely could have done a better job of saying, you're on this plan because you have this many customers or subscribers, whatever. Your new cost in 2 weeks is going to be this. First of all, they should have made it like at least 30 days. Because the nature of like marketing automation is that people are doing the thing in these marketing automation tools for a certain period of time, and moving them off.
It's almost like they could have segmented.
No, for sure. But I mean, you know, like one of the hard parts of moving is like, you can't just take people in a workflow and move them to another tool in that workflow. So you have to let them finish the workflow or the campaign before you can do anything else with them. Because you can't just like pick Bob out of this campaign between email 2 and 3 and stick him in active campaign between email 2 and 3, unless you do all sorts of crazy tagging shit.
Yeah, and that's totally not worth it. Unless you have like 100 customers that are in the middle of this workflow, it's way easier to just let them go to the end and then move them over.
Right, just pay the extra $100 to Drip next month. Yeah.
Right, right. Yeah, that's crazy. I'm a little bit surprised at that. But yeah, with Recapture, we have an API integration as well, where certain things inside of Recapture trigger tagging events over in Drip, so that we can actually determine where is somebody sitting in a trial. Are they on which platform? How many things have they accomplished in the app? And it tells us, like, should I be sending them a reminder email? Should I be leaving them alone? Do we move them on to the final sequence? You know, are they canceling from the tool altogether? Like, all of these things are integrated into Drip. So, you know, Recapture ain't moving off of Drip right now. It's the same deal. It's just not worth my time. And I haven't even hit the boundary of the next thing on the tier. So I don't even think I have a price increase for Recapture. So that's just a non-issue with them.
Yeah.
With the plugins, it's a little bit different. I have a pretty sizable list over there for the two of them in the tens of thousands. So the price increase was substantial. It was a doubling. Went from 309 to 618 or something like that. And I was like, ah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I'm like, this is already sort of a cost center for me anyway. I'm like, I'm trying to keep these things lean and profitable, and this ain't helping by doubling my costs every year. So I immediately went and did like a hardcore prune of the list. So I took out 5 digits of subscribers that hadn't like done anything in over a year, and they hadn't opened or clicked on the last 10 emails. I mean, I made it very, very generous in terms of like inactivity, but I purged that list hard. So that took out a very sizable chunk right there. So that's going to drop my monthly cost now down quite a bit. So my annual plan will get to play out a little bit longer here on Drip. And I still have to decide where I'm going with it. I don't really know yet 100% where I want to land, because I do have some automations that I have in there. When people sign up on email lists, the widget on the site does that and drops them into the whole website sequence. And then there's some other things, but it's not quite the same as Recapture. Like, I have a deeper integration with Recapture. So still not 100% sure what I'm doing there.
Yeah, man. You know, so the other thing that I looked at pretty hard was moving to MailChimp. And I'd seen some other people in Slack groups that were in saying, why not just move to MailChimp? Like, if you have something simple, like a person signs up and you send them these 5 emails, that's perfect for MailChimp. And they have actually like tagging and automation and stuff in MailChimp now.
But it's, have you seen it? Oh my God, the UI and the UX for that.
Yeah, right. That's exactly what I was going to say. Like, it's definitely there, but unless you're already using MailChimp, for me, it was very difficult to understand. The time I've spent in ConvertKit is a really pleasurable experience. Like, it's just really pretty and nice, and they have like video prompts on every new screen you go to that you haven't been to before. And I mean, Nathan being like a design background kind of guy, and that being kind of baked into the ethos of the company, is not surprising that it's done well. Mm-hmm. But as a SaaS person, I look at that and say, like, this is really done well. I'm going to take a couple of hints of what they're doing and trying to put it in my stuff. But I mean, I think for me, the big lesson here is like, one, if you're going to communicate with customers on something that's not great, be very, very careful about how you do it. If you're going to raise prices, grandfather, 100% for sure, for at least, like, we haven't thought about raising prices on existing customers with Castos, but if we did, it would be like at least 6 months. I know Teamwork moved like their whole pricing structure from like seat-based to project-based or something like that. I'm probably getting this wrong, but they grandfathered for a year, I think. So grandfather for sure. Yeah, I don't know. And just like think about the pain that someone has to go through, because that's really the reality. Like Dave, you talking about like the API integration you have with Recapture, that like if your provider raises the price, your time, your developer's time, your support people's time, your marketing people's time to switch tools is significant. You know, regardless of what you think, like recreating all these API events with the new provider is going to take their time away from other shit they could be doing that's actually good for your company, not just saving $30 a month, which is kind of the trap I've been getting, because I'm pissed off and that's illogical, you know?
I'm pissed off and I'm going to do something about it.
Yeah. Right, I'm going to waste a bunch of money.
Yeah. Well, to go back to the point that you were making earlier about like how would you do the price change right. So for those that didn't actually get the pricing email, interestingly, I didn't get it either, because I'm still on an annual plan and my other one didn't really change tiers. So I'm assuming that those two things sort of opted me out of the segmentation of whatever they sent these pricing emails.
Yeah.
But my annual plan will eventually expire and I'm sure I'll get something then. But you could go and look it up. But I mean, the email that was sent out really made some key mistakes here. Ones that, ironically, if you look at the Help Scout email, or if you look at the drip price increase email that Rob sent out like 2 or 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago, I don't even remember exactly when it was. It was basically the time when they redid all their pricing plans after they'd added the workflows and said, all right, here's what we're doing now. But you know, when Drip sent out their one, or Lead Pages sent out their one now, they basically said, yeah, we're doing a boost. You know, they didn't even call it a price increase. They said, yeah, we've added a lot of functionality, but they didn't give you a list. Like, they didn't tell you what had changed and what had been there. And when I look back over the past year, I was like, well, what? We got a visual email editor? I think mm-hmm. that's it. Mm-hmm. I mean, visually, what I see, that's it. And they did like a complete website redesign with all those crazy colors, which, you know, okay, great. But that didn't really improve my life or change my functionality or make it easier for me to send emails or whatever. And then they didn't really address like sort of the ongoing concerns that people had. Like, there's definitely a lot of people that are complaining about the deliverability rates going down and that the quality of the support has gone down. They said nothing about any of these things, and we're trying to improve it, or we hear you, or none of this stuff. So there was no acknowledgement of existing customer concerns. There was no detail about why this price increase is happening. Like, here's some solid reasons why we're going to raise a price on you. And then, you know, just address it empathetically and say, look, you know, we're really concerned. You know, we know that you're concerned about this, and if you have anything, just let us know. But they didn't do any of those things. And when I look back at the Help Scout email, that's exactly the set of things that Nick Francis did when he outlined that big price increase there. So I actually have the email in front of me. So he broke it down into three sections. The first section is how this affects you. And it basically was totally personalized to me. It says your plan will increase X from Y to Z, and you'll see this increase on date J, you know, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And if you have annual payments, blah, 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 and we estimate your new price and blah, blah. Like, it was very clear, like, exactly what was happening. None of that was in the drip email. It didn't even have a link to the new pricing. I had to go dig it up off of Twitter. So that was, you know, not the best way to do that. And then there was a whole explanation in Nick's email from Help Scout. Why is this change? And he's got three subpoints on here. It costs more to serve a customer than it used to. We're not going to compromise on quality. Help Scout keeps getting better. Long list of new features we've added, blah, blah, blah. Integrations we now support. I mean, it was pretty solid stuff. Like, you couldn't really argue with any of the stuff that he's talking about in here. And you're like, oh, wow, I feel your pain. Yeah, I can see that. And then at the bottom, you know, then there was the empathy section, which he called our commitment. And he's basically acknowledging, yeah, you know, we understand this is a price increase and that you can be frustrated by it. We hope that the experience that you've had really lives up to the ability to, you know, continue this commitment with you and that you'll stick with us over the next 6 months. And, you know, thanks for taking the time. We love you, yada, yada, yada. Send us questions. And this was sent months in advance. Months. Yeah. I'm looking at here. The price increase was in October and I got it in April.
Wow.
Yeah, 6 months in advance. And there were a couple of follow-ups to it. As we got closer to the date, they reminded you about it. But this gave you 6 months to digest it. And we got 12 days with drip.
Yeah.
So,
I think lots of
missteps there.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say like the couple of things that I think about from what you just went through is if I was going to increase prices wherever, right, it would be 30 days at least notice, probably 60 or 90. But 6 months sounds like a really long time. Like almost they sent that out and then instead of grandfathering, they thought people would just kind of forget about it. Not that they're doing anything kind of sleight of hand or anything, but that's kind of takes the place of grandfathering probably. But I would probably put it a little closer.
They grandfathered nothing at that point. So yeah. They didn't lock anybody into existing pricing. You basically were stuck with a price increase at that point.
But if you're giving people 6 months notice, then that's kind of the same thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In many ways, yes, that's true. But I mean, that was like the first Help Scout pricing increase I had seen in 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, this was a big deal for them to raise prices because it had never been done in such a long time that many of the customers on there had never seen a price increase before.
And I think the thing that Rob did good in his email that you're referring to before is to raise prices at a time when the value of the tool has really increased. Because that's the only time it really makes sense to the customer. Like, hey, we went from rules to workflows. This makes automating all of your marketing and emails a lot easier. The tool is better, and so we think that the price should reflect that. Like, that totally fucking makes sense to everybody. But, you know, just to say that we have a visual email tool builder, which every other tool on the market has, every other provider out there has, is not a value add for a lot of people. So, I mean, I think, like, as I think about raising prices in my businesses, it's when I say, like, and we'll talk about Sales Camp another time maybe, but, like, in Sales Camp, we've released a feature that is a huge benefit recently to be able to, like, pay your affiliates and refers directly to their bank accounts. And, like, because of that, we're probably going to raise prices. That sets us apart from a lot of other players in the market. And so that's, like, legit justified. Like, okay, these guys do things at a different level than other people and should be kind of whatever. The value should be realized from the customers.
Yeah, I think if you can clearly state how you have changed in a way that captures that value for customers, then you can do that. You can absolutely do that. So that makes a lot of sense to me too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think overall it is kind of a bummer. And I feel sorry for Rob. I hope he's not getting and, like, taking this personally. I hope he's not. I think he's probably not. But his name will be kind of forever associated with Drip. And so I hope that people are not kind of looking at him and saying, oh, Rob's company is screwing me now, because he certainly has nothing to do with it. But I hope he's not taking it into this personally, because he certainly shouldn't. And he built a great company before leaving. And I think hopefully we all can learn something from this.
Yeah. So the key lesson I'm certainly taking away from here is communication with your customers is key. you got to warn them well in advance of stuff like this. You got to warn them in advance of a lot of things, but pricing increases, you got to give them even extra time. I would say probably 60 days is like the minimum notice I would ever offer for price increases.
Yeah.
But, you know, just communicate clearly. What is it you're doing? Why are you doing it? What's changed to give you reason to do this? And what is the new world going to look like? And just empathize with them like they did in Nick's email. Like people, I've had a couple of people ask me, so, you know, how did price increases go with the plugins? And I was like, well, I fucked two of them up. The last one I did was great. You know why? Because I used Nick Francis's email as a template. And they're like, what? Yeah. What's Nick Francis's email? And I'm like, here, let me send it to you. And, you know, I have not gotten feedback from it since, but you know, I assume that people can take that same pricing email and have success with it. Because when I did that, I had so little blowback on the plugins from one of the plugins from the price increase. I'm going to do another one here and I'm going to use that exact same template again. As soon as we finish the release, I'm going to raise the prices on it and push it out and say, all right, this is what the world is now. Yeah. Here it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you have the justification of, you know, the tool is better because we do X, Y, and Z now and yeah, all this stuff. Yeah. It's great.
Yeah. So timing is everything. And I did the same thing when we did the major upgrade on the plugin last time. So we had done like a ton of work to it and said, here's all the things it can do now it didn't do before. And that was all in the email. So that made a huge difference. Mm-hmm. Definitely made a difference. So anyway, if you are looking to do a pricing change and you think there was something that we totally missed here today, send us an email. Let us know what it is. We'd love to know. podcast@roguestartups.com. And as usual, our one ask is, if you think that this podcast has been useful, share it with somebody that you think would benefit from it as well. And we'll catch up again next week.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.